There is nothing wrong with your internet. Do not attempt to adjust your settings. We are controlling the podcast. We control the squealing and the screams. We can make your heart flutter, your eyes blur from tears, or sharpen your mind to crystal clarity. For the next hour, sit back. We are in control of what you hear. We repeat, there is nothing wrong with your settings. You are about to experience the awe and mystery known as the female mind. You are now entering the Fangirl Zone.
Everyone, welcome to a brand new episode of The C Word, an Orphan Black Echoes podcast. I'm one of your Lita clones, Kimberly.
I'm Caster Clone Steve.
And I'm Caster Clone Terry.
And today we're going to be discussing episode 3 of the show titled Pegasus Girl.
Woo-hoo. Well, we were once again hoping for some ratings news, but unfortunately, this episode did not make the top 50 cable shows for the evening.
Oh,
yeah.
Come on.
Because this was a good episode.
I thought so, too.
Yep. And the recap is as follows. Jules begins to question her past, taking Wes on a journey to investigate. Lucy and Jack track down a lead that may reveal Jules' origin. And Kira confronts Daros about his handling of Lucy.
All right, let's get this party started. So we start with Jules waking up in a hospital bed. She's being told she was transferred there just recently and that she's been in a coma for a few weeks. She touches the back of her head and she has some pink stuff back there, the pink stuff that we have seen before. I know. I'd have been like, So she kind of passes out, wakes up again, and we see her sitting in the bed as a doctor teller, who goes by Pam, introduces herself to Jules. She is a neuropsychologist. She's there to help Jules get her memory back. She tells her that her parents have died in a car crash, and she apologizes that it's bad news. She tells her that she suffered brain trauma because her heart had stopped, so that's why she has no long-term memories. Meanwhile, Jules is just upset because she can't even remember her parents to be sad. She also does mention that Pam has a stain on her shirt, and I'll come back to that later. Flash forward, Jules is reciting facts with pictures in front of her of her so-called family. She's just spitting out what she's been told. So she doesn't think it's a big accomplishment, but she is told by Pam that it is a big accomplishment. It's going to help her get her memories back. She's also told her grandpa's not well enough to take care of her.
Yeah.
She does get the name of her dog. It was a Sparkle Fatty, which, I mean, that's a name, I guess. That's a name. Yeah. She thinks it's ridiculous.
I like the name.
It seems like something a 2-year-old or a 3-year-old or somebody just learning how to talk would name a dog.
Yeah, that's true.
Peyton, this is one of Jules and You Can't See Me. Okay, when I say supposedly, one of her supposed friends, I'm doing the quotes, the air quotes, comes to talk to her. She's very kind of like rude and inappropriate. And you can tell that Jules is just like, I can't believe we're friends. She's waiting for her to leave, basically. She even mentions, Peyton even mentions that Jules' mother is like behind on her rent, 3 months behind, and that her mom's a little annoyed. And I'm like, wow. Oh my gosh. So
her mom just supposedly died, you know, so.
I know. It's crazy. So I guess Peyton is like the daughter of Jules' parents' landlords. Yep. So there's that. She does leave because Jules decides that she doesn't want her to stay for a session with Dr. Teller. So she leaves.
Thank God.
No, she was very annoying, and I would have been like, ugh. We cut to a scene of Jules telling Dr. Teller that she remembers, or she has a memory of a Sparkle Fatty, basically running through the yard, crashing a clothesline after a car honk. So she's very excited about that. And Dr. Teller's cheering her on, saying, like, good, your memories are coming back. Your memory's coming back. But are they? I wonder. After that, we see the Foster family come to pick Jules up from the hospital. Pam has lipstick on her teeth. And it occurred to me at this moment, with that and the stain on her shirt, that maybe she was staging it to seem like less threatening or less suspicious. Because I'm like, really? Are you... You're a neurosurgeon, which probably means you have a PhD and a doctor's degree, and you just don't look at yourself in the mirror before you leave. I don't know.
Yeah.
So I was thinking it was kind of a plant.
Yeah. Little suspect there.
Yep. I think she was in a rush to see her and put her lipstick on too quick.
Yeah. Could be that. Yeah. So we are introduced to Jules' room for the first time when she goes home with the family, and they show her her room. And it's interesting because the foster mother says they didn't decide which color to paint it. There was three on the wall, and that she could choose and they'll paint it. And Jules says she'd think about it. They do this kind of time jump where you're at the room in real time, like today, as we're seeing it. And those three patches are still on the wall. So she never decided. They never painted the room. It's kind of weird.
Yeah.
She still has a picture of the day she was picked up by the foster family in her diary, which they made note to hold on for a second. So I thought that was worth mentioning there.
Same pic that Lucy found in Neva's office.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Okay, so the next scene, we flash to Kira and Josh, I believe his name was. And they are talking about, Josh is clearly somebody who's worked with them. So they're clearly talking about the machine that printed Lucy. And she asks about it being okay. And he's saying the output machine was calibrated perfectly. The margin of error was virtually zero. And Kira's questioning it because people think that, you know, Lucy's kind of dangerous and she's worried that they might have messed up or there might have been some cellular variations that they didn't account for or something. And Josh is just kind of like, no, that's like impossible. She's a perfect match. We checked it 100 times. You know, I checked it 100 times. You checked it 100 times. Her brain is a perfect match. So that doesn't seem to settle Kira at all, though. She mentions that she doesn't want Lucy out there in the world by herself. This is not what she expected, which like makes me think, I'm like, okay, did they know, like, did they know the original? What is this? You know, I don't know.
They could have, they could not have.
She seems to have like feelings towards this, and that just could be because of like who she is and who her mother is. But I wonder if she personally knew Lucy prior to this.
I think that would be a bombshell if she did. I kind of suspect Darrow's and or whoever else just provided the initial scans, the high-res scans, and said, okay, now you're going to work on this project now for an entire body. Here's your first scan. So he may not have told her, or if Kira knows, that would be a bombshell.
Yeah, it would be. Kira also mentions that she's thinking of retiring. And she told Josh if he ever wants to come back, there will always be a place for him because she's thinking of retiring and she just doesn't trust herself anymore, which is kind of sad. Like you could tell this didn't turn out how she thought it would. And she was thinking she was doing a really good thing and it's turning into a really bad thing. And she seems a little bit bothered by it.
Yeah, sure.
All right. Next, we have Lucy at the hospital trying to find any information she can out about Jules. She tells the lady at the front desk that her sister, her Jules's parents, or Jules's mother, was her aunt. So she's trying to get information about her. And of course, the staff lady was like, well, she's a minor, so you need to contact DCF. And Lucy lets her know that she did, and that they said to talk to her, which the front desk lady did not like. She didn't take the bait. She is like, if you keep asking, I'm going to call security. But during this time, a nurse overheard their conversation. So that nurse meets her in the hallway and says, hey, you're asking about Jules. And she tells Lucy that they tried to contact next of kin and nobody responded. So they put her with an adopted family. The nurse also mentions that they brought in a private hire, which was kind of weird. And that private hire was Dr. Teller.
Uh-oh.
She also mentioned that Jules had nightmares. And those particular nightmares, she would mention that she can't get the blood out. And Lucy realizes that these are the same nightmares that she's been having.
Mm-hmm. Oh!
Yes, indeed. So we go to high school.
All right.
Where Jules
I'd be thin again.
Yeah. Where Jules is in a chemistry class. And you know, the teacher's getting ready to tell them what they're gonna do today, and she's already mixing in everything. So she watches the flask bubble up and it turns that awful pink color.
Yeah.
And she has a flash of a memory of the bleak pink fluid again. Yeah, coming out of it, she passes some product to the girl next to her, her lab mate that wanted some drug.
Her customer.
Yeah. The teacher looks over and tells her she's wanted in the principal's office. And of course, her partner apologizes for that.
I got a bad feeling about this.
So she goes to the principal's office and sits there for a while, and there's no principal in there or anything. And Pam walks in.
Well, that's just great. Oh, great.
She asks Jules why she didn't come to school the day before. Jules comments that she didn't realize she was being watched so closely. Pam can't get her to open up and lets her go back to class. Before she leaves, she asks Pam who set up the things from Florida. She tells Pam the entries in the journal don't sound anything like her. Pam tells her that brain injuries can change personalities as much as personal habits.
Now you know why so many of my friends want me to have a brain injury.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Then we go check in on Tom and Emily as they're running on treadmills, and they discuss the trajectory of the bullet and figure that whoever shot it had to be shorter than the guy that got killed.
Shorter than Lucy.
Yeah. And yeah. So maybe we should reconsider our approach. Emily is definitely uncomfortable with this. So that was a little bit of a positive, and she changes it right back later in the episode, which was a real disappointment.
She got pissed off about being blown off.
Yeah.
Love how he was so good at what she's always good at. You know, I appreciate all the input you give.
Yeah.
You know, kind of like the Southern bless your heart.
Yeah. So we go over to playground as Tina is watching Charlie on the playground, and she's just standing there on a high platform while other kids run right past her. Tina makes eye contact and tries to encourage her to take part, and she walks away from the playground to find a seat nearby. Now, Charlie closes her eyes and relives the moment of shooting the man trying to hurt Lucy. And out of nowhere, she pushes a boy that was speeding by her off the platform. And of course, the boy clutches his leg in pain. Mm. Now, police officer arrives to see what's going on, and Tina tries to explain the behavior. Charlie signs that she needs to be put away. Now, of course, the officer doesn't understand signing, so she uses her phone to tell him she killed someone. Tina makes up a story about a recently deceased hamster. The officer asks Tina for identification, and seeing her military ID, he softens a bit and lets them go. Tina scolds Charlie that wasn't cool. Charlie rolls her eyes, and at that, they head home, where Dad isn't real happy. he decides to go ahead and try to give Charlie some closure by having a burial. And they put one of Charlie's stuffed animals in the dirt. And he goes through that they didn't know him, but if they did, they wouldn't like him. And basically, he got what he deserved.
What a great eulogy.
Yes, it was. And Charlie signs that she shot him and she's sorry. And that ends their little burial, which was pretty cute for the most part.
Yeah, I thought that was really, it was sweet. And I thought it was really clever that they came up with that. And I imagine that doll, the face of that, she tore that out being so upset over the murder, because that face on that doll just looked ripped to shreds.
Yeah. You know, like the nose had been torn off.
Yeah.
Sewed back on. Oof. Upside down, maybe.
Story of my life. So we go into Jules' diary. She's looking at it while in the room with her stepbrother, Wes. Obviously, they're just chit-chatting away on the different bunks, so they're kind of getting along pretty cool. And she reads a passage, or he reads a passage out loud, "Forever wild, forever free, forever me." And she kind of has the light bulb over the head. Whoa! And so she goes online and types in that whole three-sentence phrase, comes up with a book called Pegasus Girl. She actually finds on the website of the author, I think it was, his address.
Yeah. Who puts your address on a website?
I would figure, crazy. Yeah.
That's insane.
I would figure that's the address of the publishing house.
Right.
You know, but, and she's like, this is his address. And I'm thinking, you might be surprised when you get there.
Yeah.
She was, well, she was and she wasn't, you know, we'll get to that. But so she kind of drags Wes along. They actually find the location and they go knock on the door and they meet with the author, who kind of looks, my first thought was Doc Brown in the first Back to the Future.
Yeah.
With that contraption on his head. But it was much smaller. It looked like a bike race hat. And he said, well, it's lasers, you know, for hair. And I know we have things now that use, LED lights or something?
Yeah.
You know, so he said, you can see how well it's working as he takes it off and he's still clearly bald. Maybe the hair club for men, you know, maybe you ought to do that.
Yeah.
And so in the course of the conversation, she throws her diary down on the table and he's stunned and his eyes get real big, deer in the headlights. And he says, where'd you get that? And she's asking him about the book, because obviously she can see on his face, boy, she's triggered something.
Yep.
Wrote it for some kind of project. I guess it was something like a writing a diary project or whatever. And he's about no more help than that, but that's a big find. He actually wrote her diary.
Yeah.
And that's in her possessions as hers. So that's even more, like I said in our last episode, all the powers that be setting up her whole life. But it's really amazing that she's reading that before we get to this point in the episode. And she says, that doesn't sound like my words. Smart kid.
She is.
Yeah. All the men and girls are smart. Yeah. So then we have Kira meets with Daros, talking about what's going on, and wants some assurances from him that he's not going to harm Lucy. And he acts all surprised. Well, I'm a philanthropist, you know, and I'm thinking you're a BS artist.
Yeah.
You know, you got the ist part right. So he tries to assure her, and she is not assured. Let's put it that way. Tom and Emily are looking at her, looking at each other. Emily had a couple of quick looks that she was kind of, what? You know, a little suspicious of the whole meeting.
Yeah, she was fiddling with the rubber band around her fingers and okay, she may be the one that breaks from this operation, or maybe not.
She's going to be the linchpin, it looks like, because I mean, Tom is kind of pushing her away, even though she's supposed to help. And Daros is the one that brought her in. Unless he brought her in for something else that, you know, she said in the last episode, you've helped me personally. So we all said probably an organ or something that his foundation, you know, gave her so she could live.
Yeah.
Maybe there's something else going on that was done to her. Maybe a copy of her was made. you know, there that could be a whole other tangent they could go on. But yeah, she is clearly not feeling very welcome. Let's put it that way. So then Kira confronts Emily later. Emily's getting her exercise in. You know, you come from, what was it, Quantico she came from, they said last week?
Yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, she's obviously being in shape. So she's running away, and Kira's in, confronting her, and it seems like nobody else is in the workout room. And so she wants information. Emily won't give it. But then there's the crack that we were just talking about, where she tells Kira, you want to keep Lucy safe? Just find her before we do. So there's your gimme right there.
Yep.
There's your gimme.
Now it's possible that if Tom and Emily do find Lucy first, that maybe Emily will look at Lucy and do the switch right there, and she shoots Tom instead of shooting Lucy. Now that would work.
Heavy drama. Yeah, that would work. I like that. So yeah, so she gives Emily that hint. You know, find her before we do. So obviously more than what we've heard, because Tom keeps talking even more in this episode. When she says change our approach, he said, I forget the exact wording, but basically that bridge has already been crossed. Daros has signed off. So in other words, you know, if I want to beat the holy hell out of Lucy, I could do it. If I want to kill Lucy, you know, if I want to shake her hands and say, come on in, I don't think I'm going to do that. So we go back to Craig's place. I think there ought to be a sign right next to the big number 2 above the front door. Craig's on one side, place on the right. So Jules is there. He says, your captive came back. And I love Craig's character. I think he's cool. So she, Lucy sits down, and Jules basically says, I think we need to have a do-over. And because Jules is starting to see all these pieces coming into place, this diary is the latest one, and it's a big one for her to say, oh, crap, maybe what Lucy said is true. It certainly seems like it. Yeah, it certainly seems like it. And so she mentions about a study drug. Back in my day, that was Coke, Pepsi, or coffee. Anyway. Well, we had speed, too, but I didn't really do that much. Anyway, so she mentions about I love how Lucy says, how can you get it? And she says, I have it. I make it.
Yeah.
So she has it back home. And I was like, damn, you know, I mean, I guess she's being a smart drug dealer, not carrying her product with her everywhere.
Right.
So she goes home to get it. And Neva's Jules, you know, and she goes into the dining room. This looks like a hell of a house that they live in. Jeez.
Right.
It really does.
Doesn't it look gorgeous? Holy moly. So she sits down at the table. Wes, you know, says he would like to stay, and they excuse him.
Yes.
Purposely excuse him. And so he goes out. So they kind of question her about where she was. There's been lying going on. They're not sure what she's doing. Kind of typical parental stuff, you know, and I'm thinking, well, this is just kind of stuff that she's dealing with. And there was a moment earlier in the episode where Jules or somebody, could have been Wes, I forget who, there was a real quick moment where there was a mention about her parents, you know, being in on the whole thing. And so she's kind of a little uneasy and everything. And so then he mentioned about Dr. Teller. Dr. Teller, paging Dr. Teller. She left a little something for Jules, and it's just a little antidepressant, that's all. And she has these eyes on her face like, oh, hell no.
Yeah, that would really mess up their Lucy and hers tripping to see if they can see more of their memory there.
Yep. And she probably wouldn't even get back to Lucy. She knows that ain't no antidepressant.
Yeah, I know. No. I'm like,
so then they want her to take the pill in front of them.
Yep. No.
I was like, damn, you know.
Stick your tongue out. Prove to me that it's not stashed somewhere in your mouth.
I'd have given them the raspberry.
Yeah.
There's my tongue. How's that? So she takes the swallows and shows them her tongue, and she exits the dining area right to the bathroom and brings it up. And it doesn't look like it really dissolved that much.
Nope.
So she kind of sits, you know, flushes the toilet and kind of sits back against the wall, you know, as if to say, oh, thank God I got through that. And I'm probably thinking she's thinking this whole thing is really getting real.
Yeah.
Yeah, most definitely.
So let me ask you here that's the last thing for the episode. Just ask you guys just to kind of bounce an idea around. Do you think that Jules's parents are in on it?
Yes.
Yeah, they have to know what's going on.
You know what? There's a part of me that says no. Not just to be different. I kind of have a feeling that they're pawns in this whole thing. I wouldn't be surprised if they do know, if they're in on it. I wouldn't be surprised at all. I wouldn't be like, oh, crap, where the hell did that come from? But there's just a piece of me that says the Darrow's organization and Dr. Teller and whoever else kind of hoodwinked this family, who were probably legitimately looking to adopt somebody.
Yeah, because they had adopted Wes previously.
You know, there was just something that the father said about her. It made it sound like in the first episode that he knew what she was.
Yeah.
And,
oh, yeah, she froze. Yeah. Yeah, but don't you think that he thought something about being a drug dealer or something else other than a printout clone? Or do you think that's what he meant?
I mean, I assume that's what he meant when he was like, I don't know if I could ever, you know, consider this one my kid. I thought that's what he meant. But I think that's what they wanted you to think, right? Because you don't have all the information.
Right.
So it could be he meant something else. But then with the mother and her work, I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah, that's where I think if one of the two parents knows, it's Neva, not James.
Yeah, if it's only one, yep, that would be my money. Yep. No, because she just seems, you know, James seems to be her echo, pardon the pun. But like if she says something and he's there with her, he kind of, not word for word, but he kind of echoes the sentiment, you know, says something different, but it's the same general kind of a sentiment. He'll speak to Jules on his own. We've already seen that. But, I think when he's talking to Jules alone, if it's only one of them that knows, I think he's talking as a frustrated adoptive dad. Mm-hmm. And he's not really digging the whole situation. It's just not working. He said, I've been trying for a year earlier in the season. So I don't know. Yeah, I kind of think no to both. I wouldn't be surprised if one of them is or both of them are. Wouldn't shock me a bit. And the last thing I'll throw out is, do y'all think, based on that Wes is a printout clone?
Wes.
That's her stepbrother.
Yeah, her stepbrother. Yeah, I don't think so.
No, he has his memories.
I don't either. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, good. I did have a question, though, because there was a quick clip where Kira meets her son and his friend, and they give blood to the foundation. Right. And then we see Kira take, I believe it was her son's blood,
yes,
out of the stash and just hides it. I'm like, what is that? Like, it was so quick, like, that they didn't really give us any information, but I think we're supposed to see it. So I'm like, what is happening here? Like, are they cloning these people? Like, what is happening?
They very well could be.
I think her son is a printout clone.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. I mean, what, you know, like she needed the cocaine for the experiment to see, you know, that would give a spark to make everything work. And that obviously failed. So she would give a rat blood to make that doesn't make any sense that that would be something she'd want to make an experiment like hers work. You would want some sort of accelerant, for lack of a better word. I know we're not talking about firehouse here, but yeah. So to me, the only other reason is that he's a clone. He's a POC, printout clone. So, I don't think Wes, the stepbrother, is a clone either. I think he's one of us. All right, anything else for the episode? And I'll jump into the feedback, or we good? Or
yeah, let's get into the feedback.
All right, we got feedback here from our two favorite feedbackers, Simone and Fred. We'll read Simone's first. She writes, "Hi, C-Word Pod. I think it was Terry that wasn't a fan of the opening theme song." Nope. It's by Julian Baker. "Anyways, these are the lyrics, and I believe you'll understand how it connects to the series because you've seen it all." And that means me. I've seen all 10. But I don't think you really need to see all 10. "Do you really want to know the lengths I'd go to touch the smallest pieces of you? Anything I can reconstruct, show me and I'll do it." I'll have to go back and listen.
Yep.
Yeah. Because some of the words that are in these lyrics, I can hear. But there's some words that have just sounds like, you know. So that's cool. I like those lyrics. Thank you for submitting that. That was really informative. I like that. Then she goes on, "This, the love of mind-altering substances, is why I call Jules Mini Cosima."
Very true, Simone.
Yeah. "Also, the level of gaslighting by Pam is wild AF.
It is.
Don't you think?
Very much.
"At least Kira wanted Lucy to know who she is or who she was." Very true. Two people at the same thing coming at it from different directions. I like that. She says, "Lucas Miller Manning. And now you know the surname of Lucas's other parent." Did they say Lucas Miller?
It was printed out.
His own blood.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's right. Yeah. That's right. I'm on the label. Yep. Okay. "And now you know the surname of Lucas's other parent." They know. "We're all Jack when it comes to the eulogy for the for the man who tried to end Lucy's life in the orchard."
Absolutely, Simone.
Yeah. "I was half laughing and half saying, oh, yeah." Well, at least we're not burying a body in the cement floor of the garage. So.
Right, yes.
"Tina is a connoisseur of the vintage D&D cards and a fanny pack. So David, the author of Pegasus Girl, has an X-Files that just says believe instead of I want to believe poster up on his wall." I hope we're not going to do alternate universes. "Then why would anyone print out another person?" That's a great question. "And why the same person at different ages?" I don't know if it's the same person at different ages. I think we said earlier Lucy was printed before Jules, and so she's aged in her life. Jules is closer to when she was printed out age-wise. "Very good questions with answers that will cause heartbreak once learned." Oh, thanks for the foreshadowing.
Yeah.
And she closes it with, "From Simone, forever wild, forever free, forever me."
That's thanks a cool. lot for that great feedback, Simone. That was that. Awesome.
Yeah, as and always.
We also have some audio feedback from our friend Fred from the Netherlands. So let's hear what he has to say.
"Hello, Steve, Terry, Sean, and Kim, and all listeners to the C-Word / the Fangirl Zone. This is Fred from the Netherlands with some feedback for Orphan Black Echoes Season 1, Episode 3. Of course, I can't do any predictions because I know what is coming, but I can reflect on what I'm seeing, and I'm really pleased that already in episode 3, or the end of episode 3, Jules and Lucy are getting on the same page. So kudos to John Fawcett to keep up the pace, like in the original series. But you get so much new information that it's not like, okay, now we know everything. That's actually what I always liked about Orphan Black. And it's of course very nice to get something of Jules's backstory as far as it goes, of course. Very nice to see is that the character of Jules is quite similar to that of Lucy. If you see how vigorously they are trying to get the truth above the table, that's a Dutch expression. If I wouldn't know what is going to happen, I would be very curious how the drug trip of Lucy and Jules will go next week. Okay, that will be all for now. Greetings, all the best, Fred from the Netherlands.
Thanks, Fred.
Yeah, thank you very much for that wonderful feedback. And we have to say thank you for not letting things slip. I know that's not always easy.
It's not easy. And Fred, write into us for the next episode. Let us know how you're doing.
Yes.
I had heard from him that he's doing okay. And, yep. You know, the process went well. And we won't go into the whole thing, but the process they did, they just need time now to see if what they did took to deal with his AFib. So it's not a do it and it's all done, or, you know, the end result comes within a month. I think he said a few months or several weeks or something like that.
Yeah, it was a week or so.
Something like that. So kudos to you, Fred. Congrats. Glad everything went well, and hope the end result desired is the end result you get, my friend.
Yep, absolutely. So we'd love to have your feedback on each and every episode of Orphan Black Echoes. Woo-hoo. You have several ways to get it to us at contactus@fangirlzone.com. If you want to send in written feedback like Simone did, or you can shoot an email with an attached audio file like Fred does.
Yeah.
You just go to www.fangirlzone.com, check out the contacts links, and you can send your feedback to any of us.
Really?
We'll get it and we'll put it on air.
That's amazing.
Yes.
Sounds like a podcast network. Bear with us, Slowpoke US folk. We're getting there. We're three down now. So hang in there and kind of use it as a nice way to kind of revisit the episodes. If you still can access them however you saw them, I would imagine they would still be there. You know, kind of rewatch them and give us a listen. We always post on the Fangirl Zone and on our Facebook page, C Word Podcast, that we have a, I think it's the C Word, but I think the actual Facebook address is C Word Podcast. And we always post when a new episode's available. So write in, let us know, and we'll catch you on that.
All right. For this episode of the C Word on the Fangirl Zone Podcast, I'm Steve. Myself, I make it.
Yeah, you sure do. I'm Terry. I have brain hypoxia. That's how I got this job.
And I'm Kimberly. Forever wild, forever free, forever me. Aww.